Moncrief on News Talk.
Pretty much every movie starts with a set of still images, what's known as concept art. Dermot Power, who will be speaking at the International Literature Festival in Dublin on May 24th, is one of the most established concept artists in the industry, having worked on the likes of Harry Potter, Batman and Star Wars, among many others. Dermot, good afternoon to you.
Hi, how are you doing?
Not too bad. So when you're first brought on board on a movie, typically what kind of stage is that?
It depends on the film. Very often we're brought on really, really early before there's even a script. And that's at a kind of a pitch level. I might get to do some images just to help a director or a producer sell a film, to get financing for a film. But more often the script will already be in place. And so day one, we don't always get the script actually, because sometimes they're under tight restriction. But hopefully and usually we get the script, and that's our kind of where we start, read the script.
But even if you have the script, would there usually be a director attached to it at that point?
Usually by the time I'm involved, there's a director attached.
Yeah, in a way, are they describing images in their head and they want you to kind of make those images flesh?
Exactly that. And very often that's the problem, because one of the first hiccups is to try to, it's to show the director, trying to guess what is in their head already, which might be great or mightn't be great. But very often the first kind of obstacle you come up against is the directors and producers already have an image in their head. And very often you're showing them something that they didn't think of and they're not certain of. But in general, I always say, and people think I'm joking, my job as a concept artist is showing directors what they don't want. Most of it, before you show them what they do want.
Yes, so there's a degree of back and forth then in that. No, that's not what I'm thinking of.
Yeah, completely. For example, with George Lucas on Star Wars, if you hit what he's asking for early on in the process, he'll still send you off for a couple of weeks exploring all the other ways that the design could be done. Just in case. So very often it's covering a lot of ground in case he hasn't thought of something. But very often a director will come back to their initial idea or the initial thing that you designed. Yeah.
Okay, just to be sure. And so how many images are you expected to produce? Are they and what are they supposed to depict? Is it like key plot points in the film kind of thing?
It really depends on the film. So, for example, I'm working on Narnia at the moment, and that I'm just doing creatures on that film. But with other films, you'll do environments and sets. And trying to figure out how many images you do, that's kind of how long is a piece of string. It does depend. I tend to work very quickly as a character and costume artist. So I think over the year on Star Wars, the first one, maybe I did 500 designs over the year. So a couple of day kind of thing. But it really does depend, because other films, then you're using 3D models and all sorts of, I'll even do animation if that helps. Sell an idea. Whatever it takes to sell the idea is kind of how I see my job, either doing very finished 3D models that are very realistic or very quick sketches.
Yeah, and I suppose depending now, I mean, you've mentioned Narnia and you mentioned Star Wars, but you've worked on sort of a movie set in the real world, so to speak, so you probably have more to work with if it's a historical piece.
Well, so I did Masters of the Air for Apple TV, and that was completely historical. So my job there was really just taking all the elements from the art department of the sets that they were going to build, taking images from the 1940s, from actual images, and then updating them and painting them. So the creativity in that, for me in that job, is just making these images look really atmospheric and different times of day, different times of the year and that kind of thing. But there's no design in it because it's historical. So that's one extreme. And then, obviously another extreme would be something like Star Wars. But even with Harry Potter, though, there was a huge emphasis on making things as real as possible. If you take a creature like Buckbeak, the hippogriff, which I designed, I ended up going down to the Royal Veterinary School in Camden and talking to them there about how you'd get a six-winged creature to fly. And of course they said, well, you can't. But then I thought, well, if you can come up with some kind of logic to it. So we try as sometimes to go as far as we can with the reality so things feel believable. That's the thing.
Would it be the case, and depending on the movie, you're, say, given a specific part of the movie to design, such as we want you to design a particular creature or set of creatures?
Yeah, that's exactly what happens. And usually a group of us, a few concept artists might work on the same creature and may the best person win sort of thing. And very often you'll have that filtering process where we'll all put up some designs exploring what it might look like. And then if one is in the right direction, we'll all continue to work with that new information sort of thing. Mm. But it's not, I've had the luxury and pleasure of working, for example, with Tim Burton a lot. And I have worked on pre-production on certain films that he never made, where it was just me and the script, and then it's just go through it and just do visuals, and that's purely to help him think about what the film might be, to help him even think if he wants to do it, and also just as a kind of pitch document. But more often than not, you arrive, and the thing about film sets, once they get the green light, when you arrive, everybody's kind of in a panic and in a hurry, so it's not that leisurely. It's usually dividing everything up, and we've got a meeting tomorrow afternoon or even this afternoon, and what can you come up with? But I really enjoy that, the kind of level of energy that gives you.
I would imagine so. There's a bit of pressure attached to that. So you're working from pre-production through production as well.
Yeah, and sometimes into post-production as well. And even sometimes when I've finished a movie, I get hauled back in to do some VFX kind of workovers. But like, for example, in Dumbo, Tim Burton's Dumbo, the skies, a lot of that film was shot in blue screen and in sound stages. And Tim thought the skies looked too realistic and he wanted them to be more magical and painterly. So I spent 3 or 4 months just painting skies. For a film like that. So yeah, it does go the whole range from, most of the time what we're doing is pure design to help people, a director, think about what they want on screen. Yeah. But sometimes we do post-production elements that actually end up in the film, but not so often, very rarely. Those skies are a rare example. And also, say in the middle Fantastic Beast film, there's the big French Ministry of Magic. I illustrated all the glass. There's this giant glass dome, and I suggested that it should be covered in illustrated animals. And then I tried to farm it out to somebody else to do it, but the designers thought it was a great suggestion and that I should do it. So if you look, that's the other thing about films. If you have to pay close attention, and it'll be gone in a second. But if you look at that French Ministry of Magic, the glass illustrations are my actual illustration.
That's extraordinary. If you're working on the likes of Harry Potter or Batman or things that have had a life before they were put on a screen, do you have to be aware that, you know, your average Harry Potter fan might suddenly be demonstrating outside your home if you've depicted something that...
You have to ignore it. You have to ignore it. You just go to... You find what your story... When you're designing, you just have to figure out what story points you need to show in the design. And one of those story points might be ignore all the fans who want it to be a certain way, or pay attention to what the fans, but you really have to set that one aside. You've got enough to be dealing with without worrying about that. I think when I was on Star Wars, the first Star Wars film I worked on two, I remember sitting there working from London, waiting for the US to wake up. and being very nervous because it was like a dream come true to work on the film. Mm-hmm. And then just having to set those ulterior specters to one side and just kind of get on with it. So it might be the same with the fans. Yeah.
When you and using the example you gave about putting the animal designs, then if you just go to the movies to see a film, you're probably looking at it a completely different way than the rest of us would. You're probably noticing all sorts of things the rest of us wouldn't.
Yeah, but if the story's good, you don't. It's a problem if you're noticing that stuff, I think. You know, when I go to films I've worked on, I kind of have to see them twice, because the first time you're just remembering, oh, I remember the day that we did that, and oh, I remember that, and you see the joint. I actually think it adds to the film, because I'm very interested in how they do things, and it's just part of the storytelling. But I think if a script is good enough, it all comes down to that. You enjoy those aspects of the creatures looking real, but you can get away with a lot if the story is really, really good.
Yeah. Though I assume, though, in whether you're designing a set or an individual, you're in your mind, you're adding to that story, perhaps in subtle ways that people might notice on a first viewing.
What's interesting about that, actually, because I had this conversation yesterday with somebody. Sometimes a part of a script can be really hard to figure out what the writer or director are going for. And sometimes when you draw it and design the character, you pull things out that sort of clarify things in the script. So you're not really adding things. You're more, the visuals that you do help kind of cement certain aspects of characters. And I think that's quite helpful for everybody along the chain to get an understanding of how that character can be realized. You're very, very wary, though, if you're doing actors, of not telling actors how to act. So you can do. It's funny enough, because sometimes most concert artists work in games, I would say, and when you work in games, it's very different, because there's not a real actor that'll end up wearing the costume that you've just designed or whatever. You're very much more inclined to show the characters kind of acting in your shot. Whereas if you look at any of the character designs, I mean, they have to be doing something, but they're very casual kind of poses. You're not trying to overwrite in your design, if that makes sense.
Though at the same time, like, you must have designed characters, and then when you see them acted, you might be thinking, oh, I didn't think of it like that at all.
You know, the thing is, because, as I said at the beginning, my job is mostly showing them what they don't want. As soon as I see anything on the screen that looks even close to what I've done, I'm just thrilled. I'm like, oh, look at that. And then very often other people will say that, but they've missed out this. I don't care. It's my design up there. I'm really, really glad. And then other times, like with Buckbeak, for example, in Harry Potter, what the VFX company did was just amazing. I mean, you have people along the chain who are so good that they will take your design and make it even better. And also, I get bored very quickly, so I tend to step off my design and want to do another design quite early. So I don't do extremely finished and tight drawings. They're quite minimal, and they leave, put it this way, they leave a lot of space for the creatives coming in after me to do their own interpretation. So, yeah, I mean, if it's bad, I can blame somebody else, and if it's good, I'll take the credit.
I know that these things are all very hush-hush, but would you know what, like, the next project is, or the next two or three projects are going to be for you?
No, not really. I was on, actually, that's top secret, Alejandro, the original
exactly.
film, the Tom Cruise thing, just before Christmas. And I got a call for Narnia, and I was like, oh, okay, that's what I'm doing next. I have a vague idea. But no, I never know. These jobs can last 6 months, 3 months sometimes. I was on three Potters, so I was on that for about 2 years, maybe.
Wow.
But that's very rare. Usually you're on a job for maybe 6 or 8 months. that kind of thing.
Still,
and towards the end. And very often I leave a job before I'm supposed to and join another one after they want me, kind of thing. So you tend to overlap. I try to get on jobs as early as I can, though, because that's when the fun bit really happens, when everybody's panicking and they don't know what anything is going to be. And that's really enjoyable because you can help that out, and just you've more a scope to design. People aren't so they're not being so prescriptive, if you like.
Yeah. Dermot, thanks a million for talking to us. Cool job. That was Dermot Power there. Dermot will be in conversation with Brian Lloyd, actually, as part of the International Literature Festival in Dublin on May the 24th.
Moncrief. Weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.